my relationship. Duration. Depends on how many of his exercises you do. Equipment needed. The book itself, library. Clothing, optional. Age, 29. Relationship status, engaged. We have two blended families, four sets of parents to visit at the holidays. We're in good company with a bulk of the United States. Employment. Freelance radio reporter, wilderness instructor, house cleaner. Cost. Free. Mother's advice and library. Location. Bellingham, Washington. We marry to heal and finish the unfinished business of childhood. Since our parents wounded us, it is only they who can heal us. Not them, literally, but a primary love partner who matches their traits. With conscious effort and dialogue, our imago love partner is most compatible with us and able to help us to resolve unfinished issues of self-wholeness. Harville Hendrix. Tim's a Leo. I'm a Virgo. August babies both. Is there anything to that stuff? According to Vedic astrology, I'm actually a Leo, something about how those Hindus kept time. I've always felt I was very Leo-ish, so maybe I should go Vedic. Let's call it a Leo-Leo couplehood then. And if we're to heal those familial wounds, like Harville says, we definitely mirror each other. We even look similar. Light blonde hair, angular faces, Nordic athletic types. But shoot, that's half of the Pacific Northwest. I don't know. Maybe Harville is full of it. But now that he mentions it, we both come from two children families, both the babies of the family, with sisters roughly 4 years older, meaning neither of us went to high school with our sisters. Our fathers, workaholic engineers running their own modest manufacturing companies and machine shops, both learned their trade from their fathers. So Tim and I each even grew up with the smell of grease and metal shavings. Our fathers divorced our mothers roughly 3 decades in, and our mothers never seemed to recover. Each father remarried, but our mothers never did. In high school, we were popular but rather straight-laced with a streak of the nerd academic. As sexual late bloomers, we were both in our 20s before we had sex. We both barely dabbled in dating in college. We were the other's first big relationship. But then regionalism creates some differences. The fact that he comes from Maine and I from California might explain where we diverge. I'm pretty sure his parents didn't call a Christian Science practitioner when he got sick. Leave that to the Californians and a couple people in Boston. Here's where we also diverge. I'm no Jenna Jameson, but I think Tim and I are uptight about sex. Our sex is normal, loving, but it's also shy, quiet, and a bit predictable. I mean, everybody in our twosome has orgasms, but I want more. Maybe Harville can get us closer. My mom says it helped Dad and her. I'm not sure what it helped, seeing as their marriage blew apart, and I'm not sure I ever saw a time they were actually, you know, enjoying each other, but if she said it helped, it must have helped. Hendrix says romantic love is the door to marriage and is nature's selection process to connect us with the right partner for our growth. He says in addition to mirroring what the other says, aka repeating, capping off with a hint of validation like, that makes sense because, and a polish of empathy, I imagine that makes you feel, will enable us to better understand one another. But here's what I really want to do. Harville thinks we should strip off our clothes, stand in front of each other naked, and laugh. He calls it a naked belly laugh. We'll get all naked and vulnerable and bust into something new. But you'd think I suggested we don spacesuits and head to Mars. Maybe we're not as similar as I thought. Tim blames the California thing. Is partnering supposed to feel like this? I'm not sure I like this closed-off part of him, but I would never say that out loud, even to myself. He keeps a lot of himself to himself, which I treat like a mystery to solve, a package I can open. Somehow, I think if I'm funny enough or charming enough, he'll come out and play more. So I vote naked belly laugh. Nope, he says. Nope, as in nope, I ask. Yes, he says, making his 10th vat of coffee for the day. Nope, as in nope. You can do this one on your own. Well, I argue, I think the point is to, you know, do it together. I think it's totally reasonable to try together. Sounds vulnerable, sure, but what is sex if not vulnerable? I'd do it alone if I thought it would help. But solo, naked, belly laughing seems a little silly. Even to me. Chapter 28. plant spirit medicine, or castor oil packs while drumming. Purpose. Plant spirit medicine shamanism meets five-element acupuncture. Huichol Indian shamanism meets Elliot Cowan, a five-element acupuncturist and creator of plant spirit medicine. I believe it's possible to multitask even in the physio-spiritual experiments. Duration varies wildly, from minutes to hours to lifelong practice, minus the castor oil. Equipment needed: castor oil, cheesecloth or rags, towels, drum. Age 29. Relationship status: my father has returned to Christian Science. Anything about the body is now taboo. He says my asking about his health is akin to his asking about my sex life. Kind of takes my studies off the holiday dinner table conversation. Employment: wilderness instructor, acupuncture student. Cost: CD, $21.95. Castor oil: $8.50. Location: Tim's in my bedroom, Bellingham, Washington. Since I can't naked belly laugh with Tim, I'm going to take a deeper solo tack. There's lots of talk at school about plant spirit medicine that blends five-element acupuncture with shamanism. I don't have all the equipment, so if I'm to journey solo to the underworld and a drum is key, I think it's fair, and frankly cheaper, to wear some headphones and let someone else who owns a drum, drum. I refuse to buy a bunch of equipment prematurely. I'm wrestling with this hormone nonsense. I'm doing my Ashtanga yoga, eating large quantities of vegetables, trying various supplements, boiling Chinese herbs, aka stinking up the house, getting good sleep, working hard, getting acupuncture, and loving on Tim. Still wrestling with dad stuff and worrying about mom. Maybe my breasts are reacting. Did I mention I still can't talk to dad on the phone alone? I'm supposed to understand that he and Margie are now one. One. Maybe my breasts are in protest. While my spirits have improved markedly with all these activities, my breasts are still a beast. I've tried loving them, talking to them. Come on now, gals. What do you need? How can I help? I appreciate you both, but what's with the pain? But they still kill. Less often, but when they kill, they kill. So I'm busting out the packs and the drum. Today's mission? To experience a shamanic journey. In my acupuncture discipline, they also do with plants what we do with needles. But to select the plants for treatment, stay with me here, you must journey to the plants and let them tell you what they would be best used for. Before I journey to an actual plant, like mullein, say, or penstemon, I'm supposed to journey down to the underworld and make a proper introduction. At best, I'll run into my power animal, if I have such a thing. I've spent the last half hour getting everything ready. I have the rags properly saturated, and they now cover my breasts. Castor soothes inflammation, and breast tissue discomfort, hormonally caused or not, is aided by decreasing inflammation. I'm lying on about 7 towels. I only have one nice pair of sheets that I got from Mrs. Anderson, and I'm not going to ruin them with health experiment number 45. Headphones on, I hit play. Tum, 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 tum. This is an awfully expensive CD for the rather simple melody. I'm supposed to close my eyes, relax, and drop in. I'm distracted by the castor oil. I might have over-soaked the rags. I feel a trickle of oil dribbling down my flank. This is all harder than it sounds. I'm to picture a cave or tunnel and take my time crawling down into it. It's dark, rather like Lord of the Rings meets Alice in Wonderland. Somebody needs to turn on some light. It's rocky, all right. Dark, wet rocks. Water droplets echo through the passage. As caves go, this feels pretty sacred. I crawl out from the cave and enter the forest. Before me stand tall trees gnarled with a dense canopy above. The light dappling through is rather blue, illuminated by moonlight. I'm supposed to meet someone here. Surely somebody will show. What are the animals I always hear about in shamanic talk? A raven, a bear, a wolf. Heck, I'd settle for a fish. I walk around a while. It appears a rather empty neighborhood. Maybe everybody's out for drinks. What do shamanic animals drink anyway? I bet absinthe or gin and tonics. Certainly some of this gnarly bushy stuff is juniper. Maybe there's a pair of little squirrels making moonshine down a hollow or two. I'll have to ask around. Hello, I think to myself. Anybody here? Maybe I'm trying too hard. Maybe I'm scaring him, her, it off. Okay, I'll try less hard, less hard. I walk and walk. Hey, are those some tracks? I feel like Winnie the Pooh searching for heffalumps. I don't want to get lost. Get lost? What am I talking about? Sheesh, isn't anybody around? I come upon a little toadstool thing. It's big enough to sit on. For real, is this a mushroom? Come on, a bluish-lit mushroom toadstool thing? How predictable. If I turn around and see blue fairy wings on my back, I'm blowing this joint. Should I just wait here? I start tapping my feet. Must not be impatient. Must not be impatient. I'll focus on the drum. Yeah, the drum. Tum, 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 tum. I don't see a single creature. Not a bird, not a cricket, not a rabbit. No squirrel speakeasy. Maybe I'll just relax here for a minute under this toadstool. Just for a minute. And you know, well, conveniently for me, I'm already lying down. I'm so very, very, well, I'm asleep. Not that I know that's happening, but the 45-minute CD is over. Maybe I did go somewhere. Maybe it was like one of those mysterious half-sleeps in Shavasana. I'm tired. I have no idea who my power animal is. Coco's power animal is a horse named Shanti. She must have a gift. I just have stained sheets. I hear Tim coming in. I gather up my swaddle of blankets. Total mess, but my breasts feel better. The problem with doing so many techniques, it's a crap scientific method. When I land on one that works, I'm going to have no idea which discipline was responsible. Tim pops in while I gather. He's been at a meeting. He just gets busier and busier. I thought I'd try a little shamanic journeying and figure out this plant spirit medicine stuff. And these, I say, pointing to a pile of towels, are for my breasts. He looks at me quizzically. On our wedding day, I dream of looking like a real-life fairy with a crown of flowers and a gossamer train. Now I look like a greasy t-shirted, messy-haired, boxer-wearing junk show in need of a comb, a personal shopper, and a decent bar of soap. You realize, I ask, that things are likely going to get weirder around here, right? Yes, he says with an adorable grin. I do. In his own quiet, Wendell Berry reading, clean-shaven, proper New England grooming, earnest way, Tim understands me. Most of the time he embraces me. He doesn't say a lot at times like these, but I can see it in his grin. I think my oddness gives him a little permission to not try so hard to follow the straight and narrow. I really hope I give him that. Labyrinth. Our mind still has its darkest Africas, its unmapped Borneos, and Amazonian basins. Aldous Huxley. Chapter 29. Write Your Own Vows. Purpose. Maybe when you come from divorce on both sides, this is what people like us do. Break with convention. Write our own rules. Make promises we can keep. Duration. A lifetime to wax rhapsodic about what to pledge. Equipment needed. A forceful thrust of faith to put pen to actual paper, a loved one to marry us, two rings, summer flowers, and a lot of hope. Age, 29. Relationship status, host and hostess to a riparian love fest. Employment, wilderness instructor, house cleaner, acupuncture student. Cost, I'm wearing a bridesmaid dress, but I love it. My backcountry tent expert buddies helped erect the borrowed party tent. One of Tim's groomsmen and his fiancée baked the cakes. They are gorgeous. Location. Headley, British Columbia. We stand in a clearing of alder at the bank of the Similkameen River. I hold Tim's hands amid a circle of moss and rocks decorated with berries and leaves that Marilyn from Est has lovingly arranged. I've asked Mom and Dad to walk me to the clearing, but I want to walk down the aisle alone. Feels right. Mom is my matron of honor, and Dad will sit in the front row with Margie right near Michelle and Scott, our Wyoming and Patagonian equally newly wedded friends. This weekend will be our first official family event with my stepmom. She's very sweet to me, all dressed in yellow. Almost too sweet, like her perfume. I'm not sure how much the affection is for me so much as her love for my father overflowing. I worry for my mother. When Dad arrived, he forgot to introduce his wife to everyone. He was more focused on riding the John Deere tractor at high speeds. So Mom did the kind introductions. Mom stands next to me in a flowing silk jacket and skirt in a gray that flatters her light tan and blue eyes. My sister stands with me too, in a periwinkle gown and sparkling blue vintage necklace we'd found together in Vancouver. She's crying. I feel the moss under my bare feet. Our friends surround us. My schoolgirl friends, Kimberly from Est, and my girls Brett and Nessa and Julie, right there with me. Tim, in his equally bare feet and slightly rolled up pants, reads the Mary Oliver poem he's chosen. From a single grain, they have multiplied. When you look in the eyes of one, you have seen them all. At the edges of highways, they pick at limp things. They are anything but refined. Or they fly out over the corn like pellets of black fire, like overlords. Crow is crow, you say. What else is there to say? Drive down any road, take a train or an airplane across the world, leave your old life behind. Die and be born again. Wherever you arrive, they'll be there first. Glossy and rowdy and indistinguishable, the deep muscle of the world. I tell myself to see the beauty in Shy Tim's selection. I admit to no one my unease, question, bewilderment, worry, fear, compassion, disappointment, sadness, concern with his choice and what it means. I read somewhere that crows are the ministers of veiled mystery. They appear to be doing their job. More than mysterious, it was looking pretty darn dark. They pick at limp things, overlords, anything but refined, drive down any road. Seen one? You've seen them all. Pellets of black fire. Indistinguishable. And I read him Pablo Neruda. So I love you because I know no other way than this, where I does not exist, nor you, so close that your hand on my chest is my hand, so close that your eyes close as I fall asleep. Then I promise to honor his nature, not to press him to share himself, and instead encourage his own pace and style, his introversion. I think my exact words, I promise to be like a sponge, to soak up what you offer. Yes, folks, you heard that right. I wish I could say this was a typo. I vowed to be a sponge. Sponge, noun, 1. A primitive sedentary aquatic invertebrate with a soft porous body that is typically supported by a framework of fibers or calcareous or glassy spicules. 2. Sponges absorb liquid and are used for washing and cleaning. And natural tampons. My big promise, a sponge. Keep in mind, I wrote these. My own brilliance, thank you very much. Make of that what you will. Quite a way to bookend Neruda, a sponge. At the time, as crazy as it sounds, I meant it. I hoped to make Tim feel safe and held so he could open toward me, and he vowed to do what I hoped. I promise to share myself, to open without prompting, to let me, Megan, into his private world. Before placing our rings on one another's fingers, we pass them through our friends' hands to bless them. We kiss, we embrace. I run my fingers through his thick hair. We stare at each other with giddy nervousness and delight. We walk to the bank of the Similkameen and each throw a flower into the river with a wish for the sanctity of hope, the enduring nature of love, and the leap of faith such promises require. I love this day. We will eat cake and dance as an evening fog settles on our tent under the stars, replete with Japanese lanterns and twinkly lights. Chapter 30. Doula Certification. Purpose. Learn to provide physical, emotional, and informational support to a mother before, during, and shortly after childbirth, to help her achieve the healthiest, most satisfying experience possible. Duration, 3-day workshop and then subsequent apprenticeship. Equipment needed. A pregnant mother in labor, then ice chips, rice bag, hot water bottle, tennis balls. Frankly, whatever helps get her done. Hank Williams, speed metal, Gregorian chanting, nipple clamps. Age, 30. Relationship status, newlywed. Employment, acupuncture student, retail worker. Cost. Interning is free. Location. St. Joseph Hospital, Bellingham, Washington. A baby was born today. A perfect, small, soft, pink little baby. It's not mine. And it's the most perfect creature I have ever seen take its first breath. Correction. It's the most perfect creature I've seen take her first breath. It was a girl. And I, a mere handmaid. Technically, I'm the handmaid's handmaid. I'm still in training. I got the call from the head doula, and the next thing I know, I'm putting a rice bag on the lower half of a tall, heavy-set blonde woman in labor. She's at 4 centimeters. It's gonna be a while. Truth be told, I want a baby. I want to grow one in my belly. I want the man I love like no other to lie on top of me, and in that perfect moment of connection, I want him to flood me with everything he's got. I want to receive that one perfect sperm that swims that one perfect speed to be greeted by that one perfect fat and happy egg who will receive him and say, "It's about time. Get on in here, my sweet friend. Let's make something happen." But now isn't the time. While I wonder if it will ever be time, I refuse to mope. That man I love like no other says he's not ready. And really, am I? Being in school again and all? Before we married, he said he was open to having one, then maybe adopting one, but sometimes he gets on a zero populationist thing. But what's one more baby in the world? One more baby. And it would be ours. In lieu of obsessing over a baby, I will learn about them, help them come into the world. The birth of my own baby is no more beautiful than any other, and that's the truth. Turns out the world of doulas, natural childbirth, and midwifery are exactly how I imagined. The granola factor is high, with a fair share of Birkenstocks, headscarves, and handmade long purses. But jeans and t-shirts are represented as well. I'm in the t-shirt jeans contingency, although lately I've been feeling a little puffy, so today it's leggings. And as I would imagine, the training, in all its political correctness, resides in a Latino community center. Its walls replete with photographs of protest marches, native tapestries, and posters for after-school programs. Our training room smells like someone has been cooking quinoa, and with this crowd, I'm sure someone has been cooking quinoa. We'll likely be served this Aztec grain with a side of hemp dip come snack time. Day one. Childbirth education? Fine. Role-playing as pregnant people? Fine. Listening to babies' heartbeats with old-school wooden trumpet-like objects? Fascinating. 101 rice bag, yoga ball, stretching ball positions, magnificent. Day two, birth stories, riveting. Birth plan write-up exercises, comprehensive. But must they keep showing slideshow after slideshow of touching births to the soundtrack of crooning women who have lost their way home from Lilith Fair? They're trying to kill me with sentimentality, and it's working. Aren't photographs of birth emotional enough without Joan Baez or Sarah McLachlan? I'm a sucker for these slideshows. 6 in 2 days. Soon, I'll require an IV drip to rehydrate for my crying jags. We have the water births, where the doula climbs in the tub, in jeans, to support the mother for the final pushes. We have the at-risk births, the footage of a baby climbing up a mother's belly for her first feeding. Help me. By day three, it's obvious who has had a baby and who has not. The have-nots, general consensus? They would like to birth outside, preferably in a field of wildflowers, but ideally a water birth, with all their friends gathered round. A woodwind, fiddle, or dobro guitar is ideal, but not required. Kind of like a picnic, but where the main attraction isn't the barbecue or the canoe paddle, but watching a pregnant woman drop a newborn into a shallow, inflatable tub. And I must confess, despite my own lack of batik and a circle skirt, I'm right in there with the fellow have-nots. Bring out the gingham and let's go. As a point of contrast, see the ideal birth of the haves. If I have another baby, next time I would like to be a smidge closer to the hospital, or better yet, in the hospital, rather than at home. Driving in the back of the station wagon with my midwife holding the IV bag while my husband raced us to the hospital for fear of an emergency cesarean was not so ideal. So much for the Woodstock meets Rawhide Ranch fantasy of the have-nots. Shot down before we had a shot. One certificate, 5,000 slideshows, and 2,000 relaxation positions later, I attend my first birth. And it is beautiful. Well, beautiful and educational. While the doula and the husband stay at the head, yes, the mother gets a tad deconstructed, I take up prime real estate in the action zone, the vagina. It's an eyeful. We have, as a group, gotten to 10 centimeters and 100% effaced. It's showtime. I've never seen genital warts before, nor was I prepared when I packed my little bag of snacks and left home hours ago. There is a Gore-Tex patch on the outbreak in hopes of containing them for the delivery. I've never seen mushroom-style hemorrhoids either, like giant cauliflower florets coming out of her rectum. Keep it together, Megan. Focus on the baby. Stop looking at that patch. What's up with that patch? Does it really keep the warts in their own little area? Did the pregnancy cause the cauliflower florets? Or were they pre-existing? Now doesn't seem like the right time for a question and answer period. How gross. No, Megan, the body is beautiful. All bodies are beautiful. I'm going to be sick. Oh, God. I should have brought something more than those measly carrot sticks. I ate my last one hours ago. Focus on the baby, Megan. The baby. The baby. That's right. Oh, God. The head. While the head of the baby crowns, the head of said mother passes beyond red. Her veins pop out. If this volume of pushing doesn't bring out a third cauliflower floret, I don't know what will. Oh, God. Here it comes. Come on. You can do it, big gal. Oh, God. This is unbelievable. Head, then shoulders. A subtle slippery twist of the baby's shoulders by the midwife to ease her out, and that's it. I hear that first cry. The rubbery little cherub is perfect, like a real-life baby doll taking her breath for the first time. In this little hospital room, in this big hospital, in this medium-sized city, a life has just begun. I laugh and wipe my eyes at the same time. And while mother receives her little girl to nestle, but oh wait, here comes the afterbirth. Holy mother of God, the afterbirth. Oh my God, it's alive. It's a disgusting, juicy, blood-rich blob. Oh God, I can't look. I can't stop looking. They carry the afterbirth to a tray and spread it out like bloody pie dough. Transfixed, my nausea rises. Must not look at placenta. Sweet Jesus, that's a placenta. As baby girl nestles in mother's arms, mother and father are bewitched, enamored, consumed. Little do they know that down at the action zone, a conversation is taking place between nurse and midwife. They contemplate what to do about a not-so-typical tear. I look down. What appears to be a miniature umbilical cord hangs out of mother's vagina. Despite her bliss, something not small appears ripped and hangs out. The nurse looks at the tear and then back up at the midwife. Big pause. What should I call this? Well, another big pause. The midwife appears to be thinking, why don't you call it? My friend Sandy, a divorce attorney, thinks one reason second marriages sometimes fare better than firsts is that often the second husband doesn't see his wife's vagina blown apart. She thinks vagina rupture viewing, more than figuratively, ruptures a bit of the mystique. While the midwife mulls how to describe the train wreck of an apparently never-seen-before tear, I look back down at it. I can't not look. My curiosity overrides my stomach's wishes. Then over to the placenta. Then back at the tear. A bodily fluid and tissue ping-pong match. I need to sit down. Why isn't there a chair in here? Where have all the chairs gone? Jesus, why isn't there a chair around when you need one? The midwife's bark strikes me out of my chair search. Call it a tear of the fourth layer of the labia. Did she say fourth layer of the labia? I didn't know there were four layers. The midwife takes out needle and thread and begins stitching. Mother, all the while, sees nothing, senses nothing. Our mother has one perfectly round, perfectly warm, perfectly pink little baby in her arms. A bomb could go off in this room, and it would not shake her from her bliss. I walk to mother and peer down at the baby. Mother looks up at me, smiling, and then her attention returns to the baby. I ask if I may touch the baby's head. It is soft and warm and perfect. I need to let them be now. I will exit without notice. I pack up my little rice bag and tennis balls and bow quietly out the door. Chapter 31. Get Rolfed. Purpose. Realign one's physical structure and, in so doing, realign one's emotional structure. Duration. Classically done in 10 sessions to cover the entire body. Equipment needed. Massage table, willingness to stand and be stared at in your underpants. Trained rolfer, ideally having completed the advanced training. Age, 30. Relationship status, really newly wedded. Cost, something like $100 a session. You don't have to do all of them in a row, but it's recommended, and I'm trying to swing it. Location, downtown Bellingham, Washington. Louise works on my ribs at the level of my diaphragm. You are tight here. She tries to, what feels like, put all her fingers, thumbs, and knuckles under my diaphragm. I'd like to be able to put half my fist up there, but I can't get in. You won't let me, Louise says. The sensation shoots straight to my throat. Boom, pop, wow. Out of nowhere, I start to sob. It feels scary to have you in there. I try to lock the crying down at my throat, but the more she goes in my diaphragm, the faster the tight feeling shoots up. Yeah, kinda locked up, she repeats. The good news is that crying can loosen the diaphragm sometimes, as well as my hands. What's going on with you? Is there something you're particularly worried about? I scan my brain, my chest, my throat for an answer. Well, I say through my waterworks, Tim and I just bought a house together. I've never been so close to merging financially with someone. I'm scared. That's one. Ah, I see. What's scary about that? I never saw my mom or dad handle money very well together. They eventually separated financially while married because they didn't trust that the other was looking out for them. And now, here I am with this scary house payment and new bills. We don't even have a shared bank account. I'm scared that if I do, right when I do, something bad will happen. I think merging itself scares me. My mom lost herself in my dad. I don't want to lose myself, personally or financially. Well, Megan, she says as she works on my weepy diaphragm, I say go for it. You're married after all. Take the risk. Trust yourself. Trust Tim. Taking the leap of faith is the only way to learn it can actually work out sometimes. I'm a little uncomfortable with this piece of advice and her comfort dispensing it, but she's quite a bit older than I am and seems pretty together, and why come to rolfing if I'm not willing to try new patterns? I cry some more. She presses up my diaphragm. I breathe a lot. She starts moving down to my feet and then up to my head where all sessions end. She calls it integrating the work. And then it comes to me. Come now, Megan. Be brave. Trust Tim. Merge a little bit. Trust that taking a leap doesn't mean you'll get screwed. I'm not sure it's my voice. Might be Louise's. I go home and make an announcement. Okay, I want to plan and pay as a couple, a married couple, instead of being afraid of what might happen. I'll stop being so scared. Tim seems touched. He pulls me down onto his lap on our kitchen bench and kisses my neck. I wonder if my risking merging financially will make merging physically, aka a baby, less scary for him too. We go down to the bank a few days later and open a joint account. Both our names there on the paperwork. It feels good to leap. I'm not sure about the reality of a white picket fence, but I can start with a joint account. Chapter 32. Embracing the Beloved. Relationship as a Path of Awakening. Revisited. Purpose. Get closer to my beloved, my husband. Duration. I've been reading this book like others must read the Talmud, daily and with reverence. Equipment needed. The book and the audio tapes both. I like the combo. Age, 30. Relationship status. Not just newly wedded, but new homeowners. Employment. Acupuncture student, boutique worker. Cost, $14.95. Location, Village Books, my New Age book selection spot, Bellingham, Washington. I've been stressing over paint colors. I want to make our little house the coziest home either of us has ever had. I think in the Northwest gray, yellow is the happiest of colors. I've become a maniacal Martha Stewart. I've built a tiny model out of paint sample cards with a roof and everything. Buttercream exterior with elephant gray around the windows and a perfect red door. In feng shui, a red door is considered lucky, and I read that historically in America, a red door was a sign that a home was a safe stop for travelers. I love that. I can't wait to show Tim my model. It's far more fun than steaming off wallpaper and sponging 30 years of oil heat residue off our walls. The previous owners were Catholic, and you could see the outline of the cross they'd hung over their bed. Not the confessional vibe I want for our bedroom. I'd scrubbed us clean. And if I do say, I picked amazing colors. An inviting red for our bedroom, that beautiful yellow repeated in our dining room. I didn't stress over our lack of furniture. I liked that we were starting with only the things we loved. The craftsman-style futon couch, the vintage bed frame that I'd stripped to perfection, a cloisonné porcelain lamp I'd grown up with. And so the night Tim was late to come home from that business trip, I didn't just have embracing the beloved on my mind. I had this idea of our red door of welcome that I couldn't wait to share. Instead, a night has passed in nervous solitude, and I have just picked him up from jail in his wedding suit. Red doors and elephant grays seem like the shallowest thoughts in the world. We had started driving south on I-5 to get his car. After he directed me to keep driving past the route home, I'd asked, I thought it all happened right before our turnoff. Why are we heading way down here? There was that vast silence. My stomach dropped. Let's just wait to talk about it when we get home, he'd said. Upon hearing those words, it was now as if I were driving the car somehow above and outside my body, and those silent words formed somewhere in my head, or maybe they were in my chest. Oh, no. That Stephen and Andrea phrase kept surfacing. The distance from your pain, your grief, your unattended wounds, God, I feel sick, is the distance from your partner. Where is Tim? He looks so vacant. Whatever maintains that distance. He's so still in the passenger seat, so stiff and upright. Must be investigated with mercy and awareness. I feel sick. Maybe I should pull over. The mind creates the abyss. Just keep it together. Keep it together. Just get this car home. Get you two home. But the heart crosses it. Focus on the road, Megan. Just focus on the road. Chapter 33. Emergency Counselor. Purpose. If ever there was a time to talk to a professional, surely this must be it. I'm triaging this thing as fast as I can. Duration, 1 hour. Equipment needed. A bit of a pushiness factor to get a same-day appointment. Age, same as a few hours ago. On paper, anyway. Relationship status, married and shocky. Cost, $65, a sliding scale student rate. Location, Fairhaven neighborhood. It's dense with therapists, and as mysterious geographic forces go, it's like the Bermuda Triangle of therapy. People can get lost for years here. Once home from jail, Tim leads me into our bedroom. He has me sit down on the bed. He kneels down and says, "The woman didn't stumble." "Okay," I say slowly. He takes a big breath and then says in one long, delicate exhale, "I was arrested for soliciting a prostitute who was an undercover cop, and I swallow. Silence. "What?" He says it again. "I was arrested for soliciting, meaning talking to, a prostitute who was an undercover cop, and I was..." He said more. But I was no longer hearing like a regular person, and I wasn't sure he was even speaking in full sentences anywhere beyond that. I swallow. Silence. "What?" For me, those next few sentences, however I may remember them now, were not just literal fragments. It was less like language, more like a felt experience. As if, when he began speaking, I was looking at him through thick, blurred glass. And upon the rest of all he may have said, I could only describe it like an enormous bird heading straight toward a window at full impact. And with that bird strike, the words, like shards of glass, went flying. A strange mosaic of letters and phrases suspended in the air. There are things. I haven't. It hasn't. Not easy. Perhaps I should have. I couldn't. Never told. He. Or maybe I could have. Hurt. Me. I saw a tattoo like that once. Two poems tattooed and intertwined, stanzas tumbling down a woman's shoulder. It felt like that. While he continues to kneel before me, I try to take in these few facts and this suspended foreign collage of both his present and past. I imagine my own face of shock as a shard he too was having to endure from the other side of this mosaic. A few days later, on my birthday, both of us in some strange alternate universe, he mentioned something about phone sex as if I'd heard it before, but I hadn't. Or couldn't. The body's good like that, preventing us from taking in too much when the system runs too hot. I'm so relieved, he says, starting to stand up. It's like a big weight has been lifted. Well, if there was any weight lifted, I'm pretty clear where it got put back down. I crawl into the fetal position, put my hands between my knees, and try to slow this all down. But I can't. This problem feels larger than me. I need a map, not a manual or a set of instructions, but guidance that is sensory, holographic, and three-dimensional. This is a moment when it would have been useful if I believed in God. I could offer myself up to her, him, it, just surrender to Jesus, or whomever. I crawl out of my fetal position and go in search of the phone. It's been 4 hours since I picked up Tim. I keep picturing his wedding suit with the jail as backdrop. He smelled funny when he got into the car. Not like the cigarettes of a bar, nor like sweat, but not like himself. He'd brought the jail home with him. Smell molecules from a cell. Now, hours later, my only thought, we need to talk to a professional. I make sure that within the hour we are heading to an appointment. Tim looks awkward throughout the session. The emergency counselor asks whether this is the first time he's approached a prostitute. Yes, he says, wiping his tired eyes. She is white-haired and round and looks like she could be jolly. She doesn't look jolly now. Tim, she says somberly, you're incredibly lucky to be caught your first time out. Usually, by the time an arrest happens, it's been going on a long time. Lucky. I never considered this lucky. I definitely need to rethink. Her version sounds better. But this emergency counselor seems insufficient to the task. It's just triage to stop the bleeding, not actual repair. I don't know what the task is yet, but I know we haven't touched it. Although she gave his stage a number, stage 2. That sounds good. I have no idea under what label these stages are grouped. I'm just thankful for the tourniquet. Whatever this stage means, at least it's not stage 3. Stage 2 cancer is treatable. Stage 4, terminal. We're both catatonic. If nothing else, I heard that stuff he said earlier. Something about last night's arrest and those fragmented references to younger pain and difficulty. I start thinking about the Levine quote. Turns out, I don't know the first thing about Tim's pain. They said the distance from your pain was the distance from your partner. Whether the Levines were talking about Tim's pain or my potential Grand Canyon distance from my own, I wasn't sure the who of it mattered. Chapter 34. Dugan French Approach. Purpose. They call it a somatic pattern recognition, a hands-on intervention of the body in which interrupted emotional processes can be completed and inner balance restored after traumatic experiences. Duration. One can treat DFA like an alternative to therapy with a weekly session. In this situation, it's a one-shot deal. Equipment needed. Two chairs for preliminary discussion, then a massage table. Age. Benjamin Button faceplants onto Dorian Gray's canvas. Relationship status. Married. Still shocky. Cost. $80 to $100. Humiliation factor. Low. This place has a welcoming environment. Location. Mount Vernon, Washington. I need to talk to someone before my head and heart explode. I need comfort and protection, and experience tells me this is not my parents' strong suit. I don't have a classic mother bear, no shotgun-toting dad, and today, of all days, I don't need dad's speech about each of us pursuing our highest sense of right. Plus, I want to honor Tim's privacy. I will keep Tim's secrets. It will mean years of occasional lectures from my father on my not-so-smooth marriage and not entirely kind comments from Tim's mom. She will blame our silent problems on my Californian-ness and all that touchy-feely stuff that comes with it. Megan, my dad will say, sometimes we need to love people even more to make a marriage work. It seems like you're withholding. Okay, not to point fingers, but I'm pretty sure I'm the one on the receiving end of a withhold here, and this isn't a simple roll off the roof. And really? Me? Withholding? If I'm hiding anything, it's how hard I'm trying. I would carve out my lungs with a spoon if I thought it might help Tim. How much of Dad's speeches are from me, and how much are just old echoes meant for Mom? My lips will seal and largely keep both our families out of our drama. So professional counsel it must be. Before picking Tim up at the jail, I had arranged a bodywork appointment for him that afternoon with a colleague at Louise the Rolfer's office. I thought he might need some kind of trauma release from a night in jail. But now I think maybe I should take the appointment. Tim keeps telling me how much lighter he feels for having told me. I've never been to Annie Dugan before. I only know she's the D in DFA. I'm in shock. I know because I can't stop urinating and I have tons of energy, but I haven't eaten since yesterday. I have no hunger, more this weird feeling in my stomach, like nausea, but with something else too. Annie gets me on the table, her room bathed in soft light. She has a warm face, naturally blonde curly hair, and a lilt of an English accent. She feels maternal. Annie begins by rocking my body with her hands, swaying me back and forth in a circular rhythm. She talks to me in soft tones, asks a few practical questions. Where is he now? How are you piecing all this together? What is stage two? Did he say what brought him to this place? Do you sense he survived something more than he can plainly say? These questions, no different than what I'm swirling in myself. Nothing is particularly clear minus one or two things. She redirects. I'm thankful. I need to be pulled out, if only for an hour. She asks me about what I feel. My head softens. Other than the distraction of tears draining into my ears, this feels like I've landed. While I may be in my own state of high alert, she approaches the material, the facts of my marriage, neutrally and without drama. Her touch feels kind and helps my body catch up with my brain. I may ask her if I can move in here, live right on this treatment table. She quietly visits each region with her palms, finding tight areas and then helping me breathe into them. The blessing and the curse, the more I feel my body, the more I feel. And then she does it. She asks me the question that will haunt me. With her hand on my chest, still rocking me back and forth, she puts her other hand right in the center of my sternum and casually asks, "Is he the one?" I bolt open my eyes in shock at the question. Are you even allowed to ask this sort of question in a session like this? Do I even believe there is a one? I'm terrified to be asked, but the question has presented itself. I will follow it out. Annie gently continues to rock me back and forth. She asks again, "Is he the one?" With her hand still resting on my sternum, I hear myself saying one very clear, quiet, no. Where did that come from? And what in the world am I going to do with that information? That can't be right. Is that right? I assume that's shock talk. Or I guess when answering from deep in your body, there's no guarantee your mind will like it. This stuff is dangerous. Not dangerous like never try it, but dangerous like don't underestimate what can happen between you and you when asked a hefty question. Because in truth, what's scary about your spouse getting arrested is that it throws you, at exceedingly high velocities, toward your own beliefs. As it turns out, I believe in love, family, and the sanctity of home. And this, well, what to do about this? Chapter 35, Therapist Shopping. Purpose. For Tim to get a deferred sentence, he must agree to 2 years of counseling. I don't need a judge to tell me that I need to talk to somebody. That's a no-brainer. Duration. A couple of weeks of comparison shopping. Equipment needed. Looking for a therapist mid-crisis is like being asked to calmly search for a life raft while drowning. Age, 31. Just had a super festive birthday. I didn't have the heart to cancel Tim's pre-arrest planned surprise for me of a night in a hotel. So we cried into our wilted room service Caesar salads while watching a poorly chosen romantic comedy. Hence the crying and self-pity. Employment. Acupuncture student for the next 3 years. Gardener. A mishmash of retail jobs. Relationship status. Drama central, but trying to find the positive. On the upside, I've never met so many therapists before. Cost. $100 for every sample therapist. I kicked off with three. Location. All over and beyond Bellingham, casting a wide net. I believe a therapeutic model is missing. One for the person who doesn't need rehab and isn't quite ready for the lockdown ward, yet needs something a tad stronger than a standard weekly 50-minute session. Alternatively, for my current needs, I fear classical 5-day-a-week analysis would be too much leisurely childhood reflection and too little on the help me, it's urgent. But make no mistake, I want therapy. I want a lot of it, right now. And I don't have time to go shopping for a therapist, spill my guts, and then have her say while tapping her watch, "Our time is up, but I think this is a wonderful beginning. Let's pick up right here, next week." Did you say next week? Like, next week, next week? Now, hold on there, partner. Have you been listening to me? Have you been looking at me? I'm dealing with some serious shit here. Can't you tell that these sweatpants have become my 24/7 outfit? Isn't it obvious that no, I'm not actually going for the messy look, but rather I can't see my way clear to brush my hair? That I have carry-on bags under my eyes and a twisted sense of glee that soon I'll be able to shop at the juniors department? But I don't say this at any of the trial appointments. To my family and conditioning, every problem is a growth opportunity. Here's an example of Griswold speak. Let's say I've lost my arm. It's been cut off and my artery is spurting all over the room. Instead of the obvious statement such as, help me, or holy mother of God, I've lost my arm, I'd say something like, I'm experiencing something that I choose to experience as discomfort. I know none of you is to blame, not even you there, the one with the axe. This is my reality, but until I'm able to magically transform my reality into not a bleeding arm, could one of you kind people get me a towel? And think of the unique opportunities I might come to enjoy with a new prosthetic. Turns out, I told Mom, the arrest wasn't a misunderstanding, but Tim hasn't been able to share much beyond the fragments I just told you. And that's really scary. I think I'm in over my head, Mom. She paused for a long time, as if gathering herself, and then proclaimed, Megan, think of what a wonderful growth opportunity this will be. Think how much stronger you'll get from this. Think of what a resource you can be for Tim. Really? What? This is not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to fall apart in her lap and have a solid cry. Have her say in soothing tones how sorry she was that this happened not just to Tim, but to me, her daughter. I asked once for that, the lap, the cry, the words, a few months after the whole jail deal on a particularly low day, but Mom couldn't do it. She tried, we tried, attempted an awkward me-in-her-lap thing, but that wasn't how she, we were built. And hugging, no, still not her thing. I shrank from her lap, kicking myself. Chapter 36, The Therapist of Choice. Purpose. Tim getting to the bottom of Tim, Megan getting to the bottom of Megan. In the meantime, nobody's touching anybody's bottom, except for the hemorrhoid cushion on the therapist's chair touching his. Duration. 1 hour a week each. Equipment needed. PsyD. From what I can gather, one part narrative therapy, one part classical Freudian. Throw in a little Jung and a God complex? Perfect. Age. Still 31. Relationship status. Optimistic? Yeah, maybe optimistic. We have a plan now. Cost. $200 a week for both of us. We're living on one full-time salary and my part-time work while I'm in school. This stretches us. Also, I didn't know you had to pay for probation. Location. A weathered therapeutic office. No waiting room. Tim has resisted finding and selecting a therapist. I forced myself to ask him to sleep at a friend's until he could make a choice. After two nights away, he came home having successfully